Welcome to Sewing Out Loud, the official podcast of ZD Sewing Studio. Here are your hosts, ZD and Mallory.
Sewing Out Loud.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Mallory Donahue.
And this is ZD Donahue.
And today we're going to talk about adjustment periods.
And I had Mallory over 30 years ago and I still haven't adjusted.
Haven't adjusted yet.
I do remember, you know, there's always an adjustment period, no matter what it is.
Well, and now we're...
And you always think you won't have one, that you're prepared for something, and you're not.
Yeah, I definitely come to the conclusion of, like, you just never know what's going to happen.
That's
especially
right.
Especially during this pandemic.
Well, that's true.
You know?
I remember when Lindsay was, 2 years old, so she was my second child, and we were going to, you know... whatever it was, the tumblebees, you know, and she's in this little tumbling class. And this other mother had her second child was the infant, you know, and her child was in the class. And we were getting ready to leave. And she's got like this, you know, 8-week-old or something, 10-week-old, I don't know. And she looks at this other mother and I, and she goes, when do you get used to it like this? And the other mother and I looked at each other and we went, well, you don't.
You don't. You never get used to anything.
When does it get better? It doesn't. Yes, you know. No. So just be prepared. We're being honest.
Life.
Yes.
Life.
Right.
But you know what's fun is to like get new things in your sewing room and adjust to those. So you used to think it was a pain in the butt to adjust to your new serger. And now you're like, please let me have the challenge
don't take
of adjusting
it away
to
from
a new
me.
Serger. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So let's appreciate some of the challenges we have. All right. So adjustment periods in sewing. And the reason.
Well, someone asked.
Yes. The reason we brought this up is someone said, is there an adjustment period to getting used to your knee lift?
Well, and then the question right after that was, what is a knee lift?
Yes. Right. So everybody's always asking what a knee lift is.
So
what's a knee lift?
So the knee lift controls the up and down of the presser foot. It is sometimes called a free hand system.
Yeah.
So you can, with the lever that is, you know, coming down from your sewing machine and on the right side of your right knee, press that and lift or lower the presser foot. And there is a mechanical one, and then there is also a computerized automated one. So you could have either.
Yeah, so the mechanical one, the knee lift mechanism is in there, and it's actually connected to, like,
right.
some pulleys and levers.
A gear and a pulley,
you know,
and a lever or whatever.
So when you push, when you kind of, you nudge that knee lift, you will sometimes get, like, incremental ups.
You can get incremental, and you will get usually a faster response.
Yes.
Yes.
With the computerized ones, they have actually made it so you can get incrementals
right.
now, where it's like, you know, half and whole and everything. But it is a bit delayed because it's like pressing a button.
Right. And the noises are different. Like the mechanical is like clock, clock, clock. And then the, you know, the computerized one is. So that's how you'll know. Just check those out. One's a click, click, and one sounds like,
you know,
a wheeze.
I hadn't even like realized that there was a difference. Like, I remember this being pointed out to me, I think by Joanne. She was like, oh, I like the knee lift on my older machine because
it's faster.
It's faster.
It
like,
seems.
Oh.
No, it responded faster. Well, you know, I didn't used to like a thread clipper because I felt like it slowed me
down.
Okay,
and then let's just clarify real quick that this is not the knee power control.
Right.
Okay, different thing than we are talking about right now.
Right.
Okay. So we're talking about your power foot's on the floor and your knee lift can raise your presser foot. You said it's called a freehand system sometimes because you can keep both of your hands, on your project and raise your presser foot and lower your presser foot at the same time.
Okay. And the reason you're going to say, but my grandmother's knee lift controlled, you know, the stop and go and gave it. Well, the knee lift was actually...
acting as a button.
Was in a position, right. The power foot was brought up off of the floor and was inside the piece of furniture, usually, of
right.
the sewing machine. And that knee lever pressed up against the foot pedal.
Yeah, and so we used to have people be like, how much is it going to cost to convert my machine
right.
to have a power pedal on the floor instead of on the side? And I was like, $1,000,000 here. No. So I would just show them how to dismount the power pedal, you
right.
know, real quick. But no, we're talking about raising and lowering the presser foot. And a lot of machines have this now. And it starts off, so it used to be like real exclusive. And
it was exclusive to a certain home sewing machine company because commercial machines had this.
Yeah, and then there were like workarounds. Mm-hmm.
There were some terrible workarounds.
That would like...
Like an attachment you could add on a machine. You put this big clunky thing over the back of your machine.
Kind of like dental hardware for your sewing machine.
It was horrible.
But now it's just built in. And a lot of people are listening to us and they are realizing that when they go to purchase a new machine, this is something they should prioritize. We are getting a ton of posts in the group that are like, oh, I got the, does it start off on like the Presto now with the baby lock? I don't know what the machine is. But they're like, I went up to this one or I started at this one or I got the Brilliant or whatever because it's got the knee lift. It saves you so much time.
Right.
And why?
And when we sold, at one time we sold that brand that was exclusive and only had it. And they had done, supposedly, actual research. Now, I don't know how valid
this research.
I don't know how valid this was, but supposedly it saved you 30% of your time. I can tell you, I think it saved me more than that.
I believe it.
Right.
Okay, so you just imagine, we've talked about this on the podcast before, because like ZD won't sew without it. Oh my God, at the shop, if we had a machine set up for a demo, and like ZD was doing the demo, God forbid we set one up without a knee lift, you know, because she'd just have a hissy fit, you know, so we always set one up with a knee lift.
I've never had a hissy fit in my life.
Imagine in the past 5 minutes. No. So imagine you're at your sewing machine, and you're dealing with kind of a... you know, finicky project or something, and you want to pivot, you want to, you know, get out of a hole or something.
It doesn't even
scary
have to be finicky. We're talking efficiency here.
Anything.
Yeah. I mean, if you're okay, machine applique.
Yeah.
Give me a break. You know, the foot needs to come up and down and up and down and up and down. So I don't have to go around the back of my machine and around the back of my machine.
So if you're a presser foot lever, even if it's, you know, to the right and not behind the machine,
right,
which is technically maybe a little closer, you still have to lift up your hand. So
you have to take it off of your project.
I would say someone said, is there an adjustment period? I tried to use it and then I put it away and I was like, get it back out, you know. So
I think the biggest adjustment period is people will hit it.
Yeah, and not
try and hit
to.
It while they're sewing. So then what happens is when they hit it, they're lifting that foot a little bit and they're bringing their thread out of tension. So yes, of course there's adjustment period.
Okay, so you need to be, so how to adjust? Make sure that you're seated at your machine and that your machine's positioned so that you aren't accidentally hitting it.
Right.
Let's say you have like large thighs or your machine, like on the big machines, it's sort of funny because I can see that they've like moved the knee lift over from the far right of the machine because the machine is so darn
right.
Large,
it looks like it's more to the center of the machine than on the edge of the machine.
So find the position for your body where you don't have to move your leg too much and where you won't be hitting it on accident. So find that sweet spot. You may need to move your chair or scooch your machine on your table. One or the other. That is definitely a thing.
This is worth it, everyone.
Yeah.
This is worth it.
So find that space. I would do this with people who brought their machines to class. They'd be like, I think if we move your machine over a little bit, you'll be happier. You know, because someone, either way, wasn't hitting it enough or was hitting it too much. And then give yourself just a little scrap fabric. And stop every, you know, just start sewing and stop every inch or so. Raise your presser foot, pivot, try to do a curve, try to follow a curved line. Do give yourself kind of that little elementary, like, sewing practice.
Right.
Applique is wonderful for this, okay? Like a wonderful practice.
Remember when you were learning to drive and someone took you to a parking lot
there
that was empty with no, you know, obstructions or other, you know, traffic? You know, nothing to distract you, do that.
You know, the other thing, I wonder, I think this is pretty key. You need to set your machine so that the needle ends in the down position.
I like the down position.
I think you need this for the knee lift to start off with.
I like the down position no matter what. But
go ahead. So you like the down position no matter what. But here's the deal. I could see how somebody would get really frustrated. If your needle ends up out of the fabric and you raise up your presser foot, your fabric's going to slip into
the wrong place,
right?
If you're used to moving your hands. Yes.
So have your needle end in the down position.
Good idea, Mallory.
Okay, I wonder if maybe somebody doesn't. I think that's a good idea. Yeah. Am I full of good ideas or what? Okay.
Don't say I don't compliment you. Right. Write that
Feel
down.
Feel free to compliment. It's December 14th. We are so ahead of the game, everybody. Okay, so.
2020. You know, yes. We're not behind. Yeah.
So we are. So I would give you. Yes, give yourself some practice time. The place that I really like this is when I'm inserting elastic and when I'm setting in a sleeve. Zippers. I mean, I like it all, but I won't sew without it either. All right,
there
don't like
you know,
to.
People are like, well, I don't need that. Then you are must be just sewing something that is straight out plain without any issues.
So I want to cover this a little bit. I do think, what if someone really is like strip piecing all the time? Okay, would a knee lift?
Yes.
I don't. But they're chain piecing. They're strip piecing. They're just going. I don't know.
What? They don't lift up their foot to put the next piece under? Yes, they do. You can't. You're not on a surgery, dear.
Okay.
You have to lift your foot.
So there you go.
I just got rid of that.
It's not always for when you're in the middle of a project.
No.
It's for when you're putting that project
so
under.
So even
there.
If you're clotheslining, you know, those pieces you're sewing together, you have to lift to get the next piece under.
The other thing is...
I can't imagine, like, now sewing without it.
Okay, I want to talk about a couple other things that can work in concert with the knee lift or sometimes replace it. Not for me, but for other people. Uh-huh. Okay, there is something called the pivot function.
Uh-huh.
And Sarah Gallegos, if you're familiar with the Fonz and Porter Love of Quilting, she's the host there. She's in our group. She does a lot of stuff for Baby Lock. And she said... in a prompt we put out there, what can you not sew without? And she likes the pivot function. So here's the deal with the pivot function. If you put that on, if you put, I want the pivot function on, however you do that on your machine, and this is on a lot of different brands, every time you stop, your needle will go down in the fabric and your presser foot will raise.
Yes.
This is what we do with our knee lift. However... when I'm sewing...
But how do you get your presser foot to go back down?
You start sewing again.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay,
you start sewing again. So that's great. I do like this. I would show this to people with machine applique. Okay? But when I'm garment sewing, it's not like every time I stop, I want the foot to go up.
That's right.
Okay. So... but however, I don't want to say that this isn't useful, but it doesn't completely replace it for me.
Right.
However, I think that that point is kind of moot because I don't think that any machine that has the pivot function doesn't have a knee lift.
I wouldn't think so either. Well, and I do like the pivot function depending on what I'm doing.
Okay, yes. And then I want to talk about automatic thread cutters.
Yes.
Okay, so people are like, well, I've got to take, you know, I got to take my hand off the presser foot anyway, or have to, you know, do or off the fabric anyway. I have to move my hands. You know, when I'm finished with something on the Destiny, I hit the scissors either with my hand or with the presser, the power foot.
Right.
Okay. It's got a thread cutter. And even if you have the needle set to go down, when you cut that thread, it leaves the needle up.
Yes.
And then you can just go boop with your knee and take your project out of there. So I do like that. You can raise your needle up. Let's say you do need to like jump around or something like that. But I love this when I'm like sewing in a hole too.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
like that.
Because you can't let it's any project you can't let go of.
Right.
That or for fear of letting go, you will lose, you know, exactly where you are or that, you know, exact positioning of where the zipper is on the knit fabric or whatever.
And it's okay, and it's not only about losing the needle down is about not losing position.
Right.
But like also when you raise that presser foot.
When I'm talking about losing position, I'm also meaning you losing
position
on
your
the
hands.
Fabric.
Yeah,
I'm not saying just the machine.
Yeah.
I'm saying you're sewing in that hole,
mm-hmm.
and you want to keep your hands there. And maybe you're just, you know, sort of walking them
along
to go around, but you don't want to lose that grip.
Yeah, so you've got your, you know, or let's pretend you're lining up two raw edges that are being finicky or being whatever. You got them lined up, and now you want to sew, but oh shit, my presser foot's up. So I have to move my hands, you know.
And you just made this a red flag.
I just made it explicit. Yep. I did. It's fine. So, yeah, it really makes a huge difference. I guess, though, I mean, I'm never going to say you have to use it, of course. But if you want to get the most out of your machine that you bought because it's got the knee lift, because that is sometimes a price jump, you know, where, you know, you've bought the machine with that.
I think it's
worth it for that adjustment period.
Well, I just say don't avoid this. And my goodness, if you bought a machine and it happens to have it and that wasn't what you were looking for, you made a good decision without knowing it. You will be, there's no one that's ever come to me after I've said, oh, please try it. Just stick with it. You know, sew with it, you know, 10 times and stick with it. There's no one that's come to me and said, that was really dumb. I can't believe I did that. No one is that. They've always said, oh, you were right. I knew you'd be right. Oh, you were right.
Okay. The other thing is, if you get a new machine and you can't find your knee lift and you think it should be there, look under your extension table.
That's right. If there's an extension table, it's probably
not. Yeah, I think it was Biz. She was like, we got our machines. They're supposed to have knee lifts. I don't know where they are. And I was like, look under your extension table.
Be really careful when you get a new machine and it's packed in all of that styrofoam. That there's a whole art to, you know, and a whole...
That's a resume thing.
It's a whole thing.
I unpacked and repacked sewing machines.
No, but it's a whole thing. That's a whole industry on, you know, making foam and packing that and all of that. That, you know, go through it thoroughly.
Yes.
You could turn that foam over and there could be like, you know, four accessories shoved into their little crannies. So
right.
Be careful. Don't throw it away till you've been through it.
Okay. Let's take a break and come back and talk about another adjustment period. ZD, what's your favorite way to measure yourself?
With my Easy Check tape measure.
So tell me a little bit about this.
It's the only way to measure myself, I think.
Why is it so magical?
Well, because there's a slide on it.
Uh-huh.
You actually snap one end of the tape measure into the back of the slide, and then you fit it to the measurement, and then you can unsnap, and the slide remains on the place that you've measured.
So if you're trying to measure your arm.
Right.
Or your underbust.
Right.
Or your thigh.
Or your head.
Oh, yeah. The head, right. Definitely.
Well, and, you know, measuring yourself is one thing, but even measuring somebody else, what it does is it marks the spot, basically, where the measurement is. And so if I'm, and this happens to you, that you're measuring somebody and they start talking to you and you're like, was that 21 or 23? Oh my gosh.
Right.
And where with this, you know, the slide has marked it.
I also have heard feedback from customers who say, I am sending this to my daughter or, you know, so that she can measure my grandchildren.
That's
and it will
right.
be accurate.
Right.
Right.
Well, we've actually had trainers too.
Yep.
That bought these, you know, for their customers, or they themselves use it for their customers, or it was a male trainer and a female client. He didn't have to put his hands on the person
right.
or whatever.
Also, this tape measure, when you use it with a snap, it's impossible to work from the wrong side.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you can't measure from the 60 end. You have to measure from the zero end.
Yes.
Right. Right. And I said 60, but... you know, it also has the millimeters on the other side, too. So
yeah.
you've got...
you have imperial and you have metric.
Metric, right.
And so the Easy Check tape measure makes it very simple when you are trying to measure yourself and you just don't want to be fumbling around.
Well, and I think, you know, the thing is, don't order one. Because if somebody sees it, a husband or
right?
a daughter or just a friend, I mean, honestly, at Christmas time, I would put this like in almost everybody's stocking stuffer. And I think it's a great thing to like send away to college with people, things like that.
Where
you want
yeah.
something measured.
Well, if you're interested in your own Easy Check tape measure, you can see a video on how it works at sewhere.com/tape measure. And you can check it out for yourself.
Sewing out loud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Okay, we're back. So we've just done an episode on differential feed on the surgery. But I think definitely a surgery adjustment period is like a valid thing.
Yes.
And something I saw so much when we were dealers that people, I would show them everything they could do with a surgery. They were like, yes. And then sometimes people would come back and be like, I haven't used it. I'm afraid of it. I'm not sure what to use it on.
Which
you
is
know?
So funny. Yeah.
And that would... I think I really took ownership over people's sewing experiences, so I would feel terrible that they hadn't used it, right. Especially when it is something that, like, you and I use, like, every day. Right. But, you know, one...
And she's serious every day.
You know, sometimes I use it more than the sewing machine on certain days.
Yes.
Depends on what I'm making.
Yes.
But, yes. So, the serger... One of the biggest things that people would sometimes get confused about was how you dealt with seam allowance.
Right.
When you were using the serger because you're cutting. Okay.
Yes.
And I had one customer who, you know, we had to talk about this like a lot. Okay. So you do cut off some of your seam allowance with your serger. Okay. But that doesn't mean that what you cut off was your seam allowance. You also have seam allowance that's left on the garment,
right,
or the whatever, the project. Okay. So as you, when you go to make like your first garment, okay, you're going to make a t-shirt and it's
right.
got a 3/8 inch seam allowance. You're getting your stitch, you're doing your testing, you've messed with your differential feed and you know all about how to do that. Okay. You need to basically figure out the distance from your needle, Your leftmost needle. To what, 3/8 inches to the right of that. And then that's where you need to be guiding the raw edge of your fabric. And you're going to cut off some and you're going to leave some within your overlock stitch and you will be correct because your needle will have been landing 3/8 inch from the raw edge of your fabric.
That's right.
But I don't know. I know this has happened for me when I'm trying to understand a new concept, but she was like so worried that she was taking off too much.
Right.
You know, she was like, but if I do this at the 5/8 inch mark, I'm cutting, but then there's some left on. And I'm like, no, it's taking that into account, you know, so it's okay.
A lot of times I would take a piece of fabric and draw all these lines and go, now this is going to be your cutting line and this is going to be what's left and this is your stitching line. And then we do it, you know, and a lot of times that turned the light bulb on.
Yes. It can be confusing.
It can be confusing.
Yes.
And then there's patterns that give you only a 1/4 inch seam allowance.
Yep.
So you can't
take barely cut anything off. You're taking like off threads. Yes.
You know. So that is definitely something you have to get used to. Another thing you have to get used to is you're not going to have just 2 threads.
There you go. Oh, thread.
Okay. And you have these things called loopers,
mm-hmm,
and you have needles.
Yes.
So you have to start understanding that you have a knitted stitch instead of what is called a lock stitch on a conventional machine.
You also might not be... I think what really helps with this is to find some projects to do on your serger. Like, if you really want to get the hang of using it, buy a book.
Yes.
Okay, we used to use that. What is it? Serger Head book? I have no idea if that's written anymore.
They all go out. Some of the best ones are out of print.
Yeah. So buy a book that has you use the serger so that you're not trying to take some other project that you're used to and, like, adapt it when you don't have that kind of serger knowledge yet.
One of the best things we had in our brick and mortar store was, we had, what was it? Surge Ahead, we called it, I think.
Yeah, we named after the book.
Is that what we
went through
did?
The book.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. It started that way.
Yes, it started that way.
And, you know, it was every other Saturday. Okay, I think.
No, it was once a month.
Okay.
But then we started to alternate it, you know, whatever.
Right. So we didn't have a Serger Club. We had this.
Yes.
Okay. And you came and you did a project.
Yes.
And it wasn't about the project. It was about the techniques.
Right.
But you did leave with something, whether it was like something simple like an eyeglass case, maybe.
Right.
But what was talked about and what was taught was, you know, these specific three, you know, techniques or something, and that we talked about technique transfer. So now you know how to do this.
Right.
Where else would you use this?
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, find something. Now, a good serger thing too are like knit garments.
Yes.
And our leggings class is actually a really good class about like sewing with knits.
That's a really thorough class.
I keep thinking we need to have like a sewing with knits class. And I'm like, I will use half of the videos from the leggings class.
Because that's a very thorough class.
I sometimes forget how in-depth we went there.
Right.
So sewing a knit garment is something that's tailored to the serger. So don't be like, I've been a quilter all these years. And then I went into a sewing store and Mallory showed me the cool stuff I could do on the serger. Now I'm going to go home and try and sew quilts on my serger. That's not what Mallory showed you. Mallory showed you neck bands.
Although I've done that.
I mean, you can, but I guess my point is, like, get into stuff that's meant for the serger.
Yeah.
So getting into something that's meant for the serger, you're not trying to go into, like, brand new territory and, you know, adapting something that you
don't know about. I think that's another thing, since you said you equated quilting with you know, doing a knitted. Okay, so the serger was specifically brought to the home market to work on knits. Yes, we use it on wovens, but you will not get the same kind of stitch result on a woven as you do on a knit. And you need to know that. Okay,
yes.
So I've had people say, well, I made this pair of pants woven and I just did them on the serger. And I feel like you can always see the stitches on the butt seam.
Yep.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Okay,
or I tried.
That's not a surprise to me. It was a surprise to them.
Right.
But it's not a surprise to me.
Yeah, so, you know, you need to use it in the right way. So go for it. There are sewing patterns, too, that are like, this is for the serger.
Right.
You'll see it notated. And you can start off maybe even just with finishing.
I forgot all about the Serge Ahead classes. They were so much fun.
Yeah, it was a good class. So you will need to go listen to the podcast episode where we talk about what to buy when you get a serger.
Yes, that's a really good episode. You know, the
then
other
you'll
thing,
go home and
remember
you'll have
when
this
we
stuff.
Gave our when we did our serger what did we
workshop
call it? Our workshops and we would have
serger
people
serger superstar.
Yeah, serger, and we would have people laughing so hard.
We did serger superstar. It was the last workshop we had when the shop was open, and
that's
it was
true.
Like I just found out I was pregnant with Jerome.
That's right.
And that was the last in-person workshop we did.
Yeah.
And someone just reshared the YouTube video where we were like, we're gonna do the serger superstar workshop. And I just think about
it was so much fun.
I also think about sometimes how that was like us running a workshop was like kind of like a big deal. I'm like, oh, I know how I'd market that now. Like I know exactly what to do, you know, and everything. And anyway, you know, maybe one day when we can all safely get together again, we'll do something like that.
So when you get the serger, you need to listen to our podcast.
Yeah.
Probably beforehand, maybe.
Get some stuff.
Right.
Don't go home with just a serger.
Right, because, you know, you're going to need some different threads. You'll need to understand some threads. You'll eventually get into the fun of specialty threads, what we call non-needle threads, that you get to put through the loopers. And they won't fit through the needles.
Yeah.
They only fit through the loopers, but, you know, they become decorative threads. So all of a sudden, the serger becomes this decorative instrument that you didn't think about it being.
Yeah, it's like either the machine is sewing a seam that's, like, going around my butt, or it's doing something absolutely useless and decorative. It's like one. I feel like it's the most utilitarian, or I'm doing like a wave stitch, which like no one really needs.
You don't need it. It's fun to have.
Yes. I love decorative stitches, but yes. So find serger specific projects. Make sure you get the materials you need, because they will be different from your sewing stuff. And you know, you're talking about going to a parking lot.
Well,
to a serger parking lot. Well, and give yourself some time.
The other thing I see is people a lot of times, you know, on our Facebook page will say, "I want a serger. Should I get this one?" And I really want to say to them, "You should get information. What do you know about a serger that you're all of a sudden just jumping into? Should I get this serger?" You know, it's kind of scary for me.
So we recorded an episode a while back called Should You Get a Serger, Which One? Which is basically just an advertisement for baby lock sergers. So maybe I should retitle it, but whatever. Some people are like, should I get a serger? And it's such a loaded question. Like, first of all, I have no idea if you should get a serger or not.
No.
I'm glad I have a serger. Like, of course, you know, but it would be like, I want to have like a 45-minute conversation
if you're asking if someone owns that serger and how it worked for them, fine. Like, I guess that's... But should I get this serger? Whoa. Like, I mean, that's just really hard to answer.
I think that Facebook groups aren't good for a lot of information.
No joke. Be careful.
Perhaps specific feedback on a serger is a good place to get. So like if you're trying to decide like a medical decision or a financial decision, maybe don't ask a bunch of strangers on Facebook. But if you say, "I'm thinking about this serger. What have you thought of it?" Actually, people in the self-sewn wardrobe group will give you. People take some time to write some really helpful comments.
Good. Yeah. But if you should get a serger, I don't know. I need to talk to you. And you need more information. I don't want to lead you down. Yes, you should get a serger if you really think you're going to use it, and learn it.
Right.
Okay. Yes, you can't take it home and pull it out of the box and go, "Hallelujah. You know, I've hit pay dirt." Even my best and favorite serger, you can't just take it home and be flying the next day.
You have to.
You need lessons. You need guidance of some sort, a little bit.
And there's a lot of stuff online out there. So, yeah, watch some videos, you know. But there is an adjustment period. However, I guess if you are someone... Okay, I think if you're someone who's going into it being like, "I want to make a bunch of knit garments," you might not have an adjustment period. You're going to fly in and you're going to be like, "I'm making all these t-shirts."
Right.
Okay, if you are someone who maybe was a little bit on the fence, you're going to be the one, you know, who is going to have that adjustment period. So don't be surprised if you go to make some stuff that doesn't use the serger for a couple of days. It's okay.
All right.
So... I'm trying to think. I'm having a hard time. What do you not use the serger for?
Well, I use it for everything. And the other thing is, it's like clothing construction. The actual sequence of construction changes with a serger.
Yeah. I think I was going to say, I'm about to make these crazy quilted Christmas stockings.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that's going to be on the sewing machine.
Yeah, it's
going to
be on your sewing machine.
So if I was a crazy quilter in general... And I went on a crazy quilting jag and didn't use my serger for a week.
Right.
Don't beat yourself up is what I'm saying. Okay. So, you know, if then you have a t-shirt week, okay, you're going to be on your serger some more.
Right.
All right. So don't worry if you – it's a lot of people would come in and shop, and I feel like to justify the expense of the serger, they'd want to, like, replace –
really do something.
– the sewing machine. Yeah. You know, I can't buy it unless it replaces my sewing machine. I'd be like, well, that's not what it does.
Well, and I used to describe it to people is you have an oven and you have a microwave. You know, they function differently, and I love them both, but I don't want to do without either one.
Okay. I am just going to end this podcast with a little PSA about fondant au chocolat. Okay. Oh, I think my we're God. Done with the adjustment period thing here.
I'm still adjusting to Mallory.
Here's the deal. This is like the easiest dessert to make. All right. And it's 5 eggs. Okay. And then you melt like 200 grams of chocolate, 200 grams of sugar, and some butter together. It's like a stick and a quarter of butter. So you melt that all together over the stovetop. Okay. And you don't even have to use a double boiler if you're good. You got your 5 eggs. You whisk together your 5 eggs and you slowly add your hot chocolate mixture. Okay. And you don't want to scramble your eggs, right, everybody?
Right.
You know, so you got to be real slow. Real slow. Yeah. Okay. And it's fine. And then you can put that mixture like in the fridge until you're ready. And then you just pour it into ramekins and bake it. And then you think, and then you're supposed to bake it so that the center is still melty, okay, yeah, and the outside's hard, right. So it's molten in
it's
the middle.
Molten,
it's the original lava cake, yeah. Right? Okay, so you'd think this will not reheat well, and you made too much. No, it does. It reheats amazing in the microwave, okay?
Because the microwave doesn't get to the center,
right?
To have to heat it up.
No, so it was absolute. I am just so excited. So I love making this dessert, but that recipe makes like I don't have enough ramekins.
I do.
I know. I need some more ramekins. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, I was like so impressed that it reheated well in the microwave. So do cook it in the conventional oven when you are baking it and you put it in, you know, to make your house smell nice while people are eating.
So,
and then you warm it up in the microwave the day after when you're having a piece of chocolate cake to make your life special.
So it's sort of like making my woven garment. I finish the seams on
with
my serger and they're just so beautiful.
Yes.
And then I finish it on my sewing machine. And without those two machines, I could have not had this exquisite garment.
It really just enhances your experience.
There you go.
Yes. Yes. I can't wait till I can have people over and make this for them. I made this.
You should drive it around.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess I could. But like I made it for the first time.
So this is gluten-free too.
No, it has. Oh, I'm sorry. Flour. There's a tablespoon of flour in
you
it.
You missed that. Well, you could use like cornstarch or something. I mean,
yeah, I'm
I
sure
bet.
You could.
There's probably something else, almond flour.
Hazelnut flour or something. Right. Yeah, so after you melt your chocolate mixture.
Yeah, she loved that part.
I'm sorry. You pop in a tablespoon of flour. But it doesn't taste like a gross flour-free chocolate cake because I hate those. I hate them. I hate cold flourless chocolate cakes. I hate them. They are such. Okay,
this should be a video. This needs to be on YouTube.
Here is what happened. People need gluten-free desserts, which I understand. But then the restaurant industry was like, gluten-free chocolate cake, flourless chocolate cake. We can just keep that cold for a week in our refrigerator. And then when someone orders chocolate cake, we can just pop it out on a plate and it's still cold. Well, it's disgusting, okay? Nothing against gluten-free stuff, but it's just a cop-out because if they made like a fresh, like actual, you know, sponge cake, it wouldn't just... It makes me so mad.
Mallory.
Yeah.
We can probably conclude this episode.
Okay.
ZD, out loud.
So I'm just saying that that I don't
what
like
did you say, Mallory?
Cold, flourless chocolate cakes. I like warm, carbaceous chocolate desserts. Okay, everybody. ZD, take it away.
So long and so happy.
Thanks for listening to Sewing Out Loud. For even more expert sewing advice, visit sewhere.com.